Well, good morning. Good to be back with you this morning. We were gone for a couple of weeks. Last week, we went out to Denver and we took our grandkids out to Monster Jams, which is, if you don't know anything about this, this is big monster trucks. And we had a good time, but it rained on us. So, I'm getting kind of too old to spend the weekend being gone like that. But we had a good time. Well, today we're going to go on and bear with me today. This is going to be a little bit different as I go into this because I've never preached about this, but let me set this up. Of course, you know that we spent several weeks, months answering the question, why does God allow bad things to happen? And then from that, one of the responses that I had was that we need to start to deal with this negativity, I would call it, in our lives. And I asked this question one Sunday morning. I asked, why are old people so grumpy? And from that, we were talking about life happens. Things happen in life that you cannot control. And if you have enough of these things just seem to happen in your life after years, you just get kind of grumpy because of all these things. And so I got so much response from this one Sunday, from both men and women that came to me and said, this is exactly the way that I feel. And I think that that kind of points that we have a church full of old people here, but that's for another Sunday. But a lot of people came to me and said, I understand that. That is exactly where I'm at. That's how I'm feeling. I thought this was pretty funny. Wayne gave me this card. I'm going to use your card, Wayne. Is that okay? All right. So he gave me this card, and it's a card that I think he's had printed, and he hands them out, and on the back of it, it says, I'm old, I'm grumpy, I earned it, so don't rattle my cage. On the other side, it says, a true friend is one who knows all about you and loves you just the same. So you got to read that back after you read the first side of it, but I had to laugh about that because he said, I totally understand what you're talking about with this. So with all that, I had this sermon prepared for the Sunday that we didn't have church because of the weather, but I'm going to use it today. I'm going to talk about getting old. We're going to talk about that today because what does Scripture say biblically about getting old? And I like this picture up here. It's got the guy off of Simpsons. It's always going, ha ha. But it reminds me of my daughters because they give me a hard time about getting old all the time. They just seem to bring it up. They like to just razz me about it. But my daughter, who was giving me a hard time about it, she said the other day, she's like, well, I got to watch what I say to you, Dad, because I found a gray hair on my head. And I said, yeah, it will happen to you. So you might be sitting out there this morning and saying, this isn't for me. I'm young. I'm a young person. Well, that's all perspective, isn't it? Because I was thinking about this week that we had a neighbor when we lived in Cozad, and she lived by herself. Her husband passed away years prior, and she was, I think, 100 years old, somewhere around there, maybe 99 and 100. And my daughter would go over and help her with various chores because she lived out of town, and so she had a big yard and things all the time you have to do outside, and she just wasn't physically capable of doing it. And she would always say this about her boy. She would always say, I can't ever get my boy to do anything anymore. My boy never helps me. And he lived a few towns over. And she always talked about her boy. And then one day we were talking to her and she said, you know, I was married and had my first child, this boy, when I was 16. And I started thinking about it and thought, I've never named before, but this boy is not a boy. He's 85 years old or 86. And so one day her boy finally came and he got out and he had a walker, you know, and he was pushing it and had the tennis balls on the front. And no wonder her boy wasn't doing stuff. It's all perspective. So you think, you know, I'm young and you might be young right now. But I tell you what, one day you're going to be old and it will happen like that. You're thinking, this is going to last. It's not going to last. I found these pictures. I thought they were humorous. It says middle age, that time when you finally get your head together, but then your body starts falling apart. This next one, don't worry about getting older. You're still going to do dumb stuff, only slower. That's where I'm at right now. But the truth about it is this, that life goes by so fast, doesn't it? Man, it goes by fast. And the older you get, the faster it goes. Next week, we would have moved up here a year ago. Wasn't that right? The 15th, somewhere around there? The 20th, okay. Well, I'm getting old. I can't remember these things. But it's this month, though. And that's when we bought our place and moved here, and it has gone by so fast. I mean, we still have things in tubs and totes that I haven't unpacked yet, and I don't know why I say that, because they probably won't get unpacked for the next 20 years because they sit at our other place for 20 years. And you have all these plans and things that you think you're going to do, and then the years is gone. We are in May now of this year, and it goes by so fast. And James talks about this in the book of James, James chapter 4, verse 14. He says, "Why, you don't even know what's going to happen to you tomorrow." He's talking to a group and he's trying to get them to realize how fast life goes by and what our focus is. And he says, "What is your life?" And then he answers the question. He says, "You are a mist that appears for a while and then vanishes." I have an illustration up here this morning of mist. This is your life, he says, if you can see that. You see that in the light? I don't know. Our light's not very good, but you can imagine that that's your life right there. It just comes and goes like that. And you think that you have all eternity. When you are young, you think that, you know, life is just always going to happen and you've always got tomorrow. And then you get to the point sometime where you realize, oh my goodness. And in that time that, you know, you're born, then you're going to get some type of education, you get married, you have kids, you try to pay off a mortgage, you do work, and then what happens after that? And it goes by so fast. The psalmist says this in Psalm 90, starting at verse 9, he says, "All our days pass away under your wrath. We finish our years with a moan." And then he goes on to say, "The length of our days is 70 years or 80, if we have the strength. Yet their span is but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass away and we fly away." Well, that sounds like an uplifting message that we're going into today. You've got 70 or 80 years, if you have the strength, and at that time, then your life is over. And it's not this insignificant mist that happens that we just go through life and we're just born to die. God says, in that I have a plan. The psalmist says this also in Psalm 91. He says, "I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God, in whom I trust." He says, "You will not be afraid of the destruction that lays waste at noon." I read that years ago, and I don't know exactly what that means, and I try to look this up in a lot of commentaries, and there's no real answer for it because they really just don't address it. It's something that's kind of fitted in there, but I always wondered what the destruction that lays waste at noon. That could be, in some commentaries will tell you that that's just an analogy for the sun being up in the sky and being hot and you're just being exhausted, but maybe there's more to that. Maybe that's actually talking about the destruction that happens halfway through at noon in our lives. I don't know for sure. I'm not saying exactly that's what it is. But there seems to be this tough time that we could say that happens in our life where we're struggling. And we could call it a midlife crisis. But we're going to talk about today, it's a change in period of life. Because I think we can agree that every period of life has its own challenges. Every period of life does. Because when you get older, people will say, "Oh, I wish I was a young buck. I was, you know, a teenager again. Young guy with my strength and all the things that come along with that." If you really go back and you think about it, it had its struggles when you were a teenager. And so when you go through these various periods of life, all of them have their challenges. But really, what is midlife when we talk about that? What is midlife? Because, you know, if you're talking about the 1930s and 40s, does anybody have an idea what the average lifespan of a male was in 1940? You know what that age was? Anybody have a guess? 50? Somebody say 50? Close. 60. 60. Because we have Social Security, and Social Security used to be called what? Social Security Insurance. Social Security Insurance. They took the insurance part of it because if you just happen, crazy thing, to live to be 65, because you live a long life, then how are you going to pay for yourself? You're going to need some help. Well, now 65 is, you know, we say, oh, that's young. So if you're talking about the 1930s and 40s, when you're 60, you know, and at the end of your life, 30 would be midlife. But now we say midlife, you know, that can be 40s or 50s in there. It doesn't really make any difference. It's the idea that there's some point in your life that you're going through this period. And I would say that it's this transition from youth to this older period. I would say this is how I would define it. That's when you become very aware of your own mortality. You come to a place where you realize, you know what? I'm not going to be around forever. And years just keep happening. So for somebody that might be in their 30s and somebody that might be in their 40s and some people are in their 60s and that still hasn't hit them yet. They just haven't dealt with this. Other people have gone through this. And when you go through this, it can be, I believe, a difficult time. I have seen it, and you know people like this, and we kind of give men a hard time about this, about going through a midlife crisis, but I would say that women go through it also. You go through a time when you start to say, oh my goodness, what have I done with my life? I am not very happy right now. I'm not very fulfilled. And so now I've only got so many years left. I need to start to do the next thing. I need to start to make myself happy. I need to start to do this. And they go into almost like a panic mode. And of course, you know, we laugh about it. You know, you see it on TV. They go and buy the red Corvette or whatever it is. It's going to satisfy them, make them happy. But women go through this also. And I would say in the last, probably maybe 10 years, I have seen this happen with younger women. I say young because it's all perspective. But I have seen these women who have been in their probably late 30s. And they have a family and they have children that they wake up one day and these women say to themselves, I am not fulfilled. I'm not happy. I've got to go do something else with my life. And they completely leave their lives behind. I mean, leave their husband, leave their children. I mean, when I say leave their children, that some of them have even smaller children and they walk out the door and they have no contact with their children. They're not fighting for custody. They're not even asking for anything. You know, they're not asking for the house or anything. They're just gone. In our church in Cozad, we had, I think at one time, we had six men that were dealing with that situation. And we tried to do counseling with these women. They had no intention of doing any type of counseling. They were done. And they were going to go do their own thing. And I'm telling you, the things that they were doing were pretty like, wow, okay, wild, I would say. And it just amazed me at the time that you would abandon your children and not have anything to do with them again. Like not calling, not doing anything. Like, I mean, blocking your kids' phone numbers because why? You have to start your own life. And we talked to these women and they would say, you know, this time is about me. I've only got so many years left and I'm losing my looks and I'm going to have to go do something else. I'm not very satisfied with this person and my spouse. And I really don't really care for these kids and they don't fulfill me. And it was an epidemic, if you want to call it that, in our church at one time. And so it will affect everyone. And it gets to the point where you say, you know, I'm not going to be able to do what I used to be able to do. And I'm not going to be able to do what I wanted. It hasn't been obtained. And I've had to do for other people because some of these women, they got married when they were 18, 20 years of age. They started having children And they say, would say, you know, it's always been about, you know, him and the kids. And I'm not just picking on these women here, because we have men that say the same thing. And they will say, I've got to start to go out there and do something. I think it's actually anymore in our culture, this is my own personal opinion, fostered by social media. I think it kind of throws the fuel on that fire, if you want to say that, because these people and men and women, and I'm putting them in that 30-year-old category there, and they will start to see all these people and they say, oh my goodness, they're so fulfilled and they're doing this on vacations. And they see these single people that are their friends they went to high school with, or in their 30s and 40s, that are going all over the world and they're doing all these things. And they look at these, you know, snot-nosed kids that they have and go, this is what I'm doing every day. And I'm not very fulfilled. We don't realize that when it comes to social media, that's the highlights of people's lives. And you don't know what's going on in the background of that picture, so to speak, of what's going on in their life and how that they feel. And they say, I'm not able to do this. And I didn't capitalize on this a lot when we went through this last time, but it's really coming to a point where we say in our life, you know, this is the best life is going to get, and it isn't that great. This is it. You have all these dreams and hopes when you're a young person and you think, oh, my life's going to look this way and my marriage is going to be this way and everything's going to work out. I love to do pre-marriage counseling, and I say that kind of, you know, sarcastically, because I always have to feel for these young women that are there and they have these guys and they're like, he's got problems and he's got issues and I realize that, but I'm going to fix him. He's going to be Prince Charming. He's a little rough right now, but he's going to come around. It's okay. They don't say all that. Sometimes they do. And I just look at him and go, okay, if you want to hold on to that. And he's just sitting there going, oh, I'm just here. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. You think it's going to be a certain way. And then, you know, even yesterday we got a call from a couple that, we did pre-marriage counseling with. We're involved in our church. We're still friends with today. 17 years they've been married. And they called and said, this isn't all so great. We're going through a rough time in this. And so you get to that point. And let me ask you this. Do you ever feel like your life is just kind of stuck in a rut? Do you feel like that? And that doesn't happen when you're just 60 or 50. That can happen when you're 25. That can happen when you're 30. You just feel like this is what I'm set on. You know, a rut, you know, you're just in it. You just got to keep moving forward because there's no way of getting out, you believe. And so you just keep plowing ahead every day doing what you're called to do. I read this article a couple of years back and I saved part of it. It's called The Second Identity Crisis. And some of this is kind of some Dr. Phil stuff in here. I make fun of Dr. Phil, but there's some truth to some of it. And the second adolescence is talking about this identity crisis, this midlife point. And it says the first occurs in adolescence. And this is to establish an identity. And that is that you must get a sense of who you are. That happens most of the time when you're in junior high and a teenager. And that's why you just look at teenagers and you go, what in the world? You're out of your mind. But they're trying to figure who they are out. The second identity crisis it talks about is at midlife, when you must give up who you think you are so you can become who you're meant to be. And that kind of struck me. At least it's giving us the idea that there is a transition time, a period in there, where we get to the point where we say, you know what? Who I thought I was and everything that I identified with, I don't know if I'm going to be able to maintain that. And if you've identified and defined yourself by the things of the world, how strong you are, how good looking you are, how much money that you have, the things that you own, these types of things is who you define yourself by. When those things start to fade and go away, who exactly are you? Who are you? Because I've identified with these things for so long, and now it's changing. It goes on to talk about these midlife symptoms, and it says, number one, it says, You know this because you no longer are knowing the person staring back at you in the mirror. Number two, worrying about where your life is going. Number three, feeling frustrated with just about everything. Number four, experiencing feelings of regret. Number five, focusing on what you are losing. Number six of the 10, they said, is feeling withdrawn or distant. Number seven, they said, is thinking about that time that is running out. Number eight, questioning the meaning of life. Number nine, feeling trapped. Number 10, wanting to make some changes but not knowing where to begin. And I would say in all this biblically that we're going to talk about today, there's nothing wrong with this. This is actually a good place to be. Because I know people who are in their, I will say, put them in that 60s or even early 70s age, and they have never came to the point where they've tried to understand who exactly God has called them to be. They're still living on what they were, you know, in high school. Like one individual, I love him to death. He's a good friend. But all that he talks about is his high school football days. He's 70 years old. And anytime that a conversation comes up, he can turn it around to his high school football days because he was an extreme athlete. He walked on at Nebraska, and actually the circumstances were that a girlfriend that he had in high school became pregnant. They became married, and this was back in the day when things were a lot different than the Nebraska football program, and they said that doesn't look good for the Nebraska football program. So he had a scholarship, and they took that away, and then he was going to walk on, but that didn't happen. And so he always regrets that. And he defines himself by that period of his life constantly. I would say that there's really four attitudes that define really this critical negative midlife time, whatever you want to call it. And these are just some of the things that I've heard myself say that I hear other people say. I would say, number one, there's the whiner. People will get to a point where they say, it's not fair. Whatever's going on in my life, it's not fair. And they feel like that they never get what they deserve and never deserve what they get. Have you been at that point? I was talking to my youngest daughter who spent some days with us last week. And I think I've told you this before. I always told my daughters when they would come to me and say when they were younger, Dad, this isn't fair. I would tell them life isn't fair. That's how it started out. And I would always shut them down. And I would say that life isn't fair. And so I was doing a little bit of complaining, I guess you would say, and I was talking to my daughter about things, and she said, Dad, I don't think you understand. Life's not fair. I said, really? She's like, yeah, I've heard that before. And I said, yeah. Really what we're saying is God is not fair. These are where the whiners kind of fall into, and they're complaining. I would say, I read this years ago, and I agree with this. I don't like it. But I agree with it, is an expression of spiritual immaturity because they're complainers. Number two, I would call them the martyrs. These are people that get to a point in their life where they say, you know, nobody appreciates me. They never have what I've been doing. And this person needs to be a victim and complain. And they will say that everyone is out to get them in some way. And they are a pro at having, I would say, a pity party. And this complaining forgets God's past provisions in their life. Of the four that I have here, I would say this next one is the cynic. And that is that they get to a point in their life where they say, nothing will change. It will never change. This is the way it's always going to be. And we talked about this with the negativity. This is a person who outlook is constantly negative. Never being quite satisfied with what God has done, and complaining really reveals, as we talked about before in the past, a lack of faith. And the complaining cynic forgets God's goodness continually. And then I would say this, and I would put myself in this category. I hate that I'm like this, but this is the way I am. I would call this maybe the perfectionist. And that is that somebody at this time in life says, you know, is this the best that you can do? I'm bad about this with my own daughters. You want what's best for people. You've been through things. And then this is a person, no matter what they've done, you know, for they treat the other person like it's just not good enough. They haven't met their expectations. It's a habit that keeps you constantly alert to imperfection and failures in yourself and others. And this complaining takes over God's authority. These are people that when you just, you want, my wife says that I want what's best for our daughters, and I do. But then you kind of get to a point in your life where you just don't want to deal with, I would say, the drama. And so you want them to do certain things, and I have expectations, not just based on what's best for them, but how it affects me. And you become the perfectionist. In Proverbs 27, verse 15 through 16, it says this in the Message translation. It says, a nagging spouse is like the drip, drip, drip of a leaky faucet. You can't turn it off and you can't get away from it. And some people feel like that when they have, I would put all these categories, a spouse that is going through this time in their life. I think you can look at scripture as we go on and say there's some examples of men who had problems at noonday or this midtime in life. If you know the stories of each one of these individuals, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on, but you've got David, who wasn't on the battlefield. He was lusting after a woman he shouldn't have been lusting after. And from that, he had her husband killed. And then there was consequences in his life and the kingdom past that. Moses, he was struggling when he was out in the desert. He didn't want to do anything. When God called him to do it, he said, I'm just not able. You've got Jonah. Of course, you know the story with him. He didn't want to go, and God called him to because he was mad at these people from past history with them. He didn't want to share any type of hope with them. Samson, he was looking for things that he shouldn't have been looking for and doing things he shouldn't have been doing. Saul, he was a man that struggled with looking at other things that he shouldn't have been looking at and doing. And because of that, there was consequences. And then you've got even Judas, I would say, in the New Testament. He was a man who was following after Christ, and yet he lost track of what he was doing. Was he going through a time like this? But if you look at all this, Solomon takes the prize for the most miserable man at this, I would call it a midpoint in life. Solomon wrote Ecclesiastes from this midlife crisis point of view. And so from chapter 1, verse 1, probably to chapter 12, verse 8, he's in this midlife crisis, if you want to call it that. And then from 12, 9 to 14, you got the older and wiser Solomon. If you know who Solomon was, he was a man who had everything. He was a very intelligent man, and the world says that he's the richest man that's ever lived. I saw an article maybe a year ago that they say that now that they believe Bill Gates has surpassed him in wealth. Nobody knows for sure, but Solomon had it all. He had the horses, he had the concubines, he had these orchards that he had built, he had these canals that were built. He had it all, had the palaces, everything. And he came to a point in his life when he looked at everything that he had and he had identified with all these things, and he came to this point where he realized that he wasn't going to be around forever, and he writes Ecclesiastes. And so in Ecclesiastes, as Hank read for us today, starting in verse 17, this is so dreadful. He says, so I hated life, he says. I hated it because the work that is done underneath the sun was so grievous to me. He says, everything I've done, it doesn't make any difference. All this stuff, he was like the rock star of the day, had it all. And he says, everything is meaningless. It's like chasing after the wind, he says. I hated all the things that I toiled for underneath the sun. Because why? I can't take them with me. I have to leave them to somebody else. And the person I'm going to leave them to, I don't know what they're going to do with them, and I may not even like them. And it's just dread and gloom here. And then he goes on to say, it's meaningless again. In the Hebrew, it's the word that really kind of comes closer to vanity. But what does that exactly mean? It carries the idea in the Hebrew almost of a box. And this box, you look at it, and it looks like it has something, substance to it. And what he's saying there, it looks like it has something to this life, but really what he's saying in the word vanity, it closely resembles being empty. He's saying, it looks like I've got it all together. I've got everything that the world would say that would make you happy. But he says, when I look at it, really in the inside of it, it makes me feel this way. It makes me feel empty. And it's getting to the point in life where you just look at everything that has defined you and you thought was going to make you happy. And you say, this isn't really fulfilling me. Now what do I do? I can either go buy the Corvette. I can run off to Las Vegas with the younger woman. I can do whatever I think that's going to make me happy. But those aren't the answers to this. And so Solomon wrote Proverbs then as a man who's came through the challenges of midlife. Solomon then passes on his practical advice to a younger group. Proverbs chapter 1, verses 1 through 2, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for gaining wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight. So he writes Proverbs. He says, I've been through this, okay? And he says, I've been the grouchy old guy. I've been the guy that's looked at life and say, why in the world are we even here? And he says, and I've learned. I've learned through that. And so in Proverbs 6:23, he writes, for these commands are a lamp. This teaching is a light. So what are these challenges of midlife? And I've got four of them, or five of them, actually, I want to share really quickly. We start to have these challenges of midlife, and I'm going to take all of these from Proverbs. These are all from Proverbs I'm talking today, because as I look through Proverbs, this is Solomon's answer to us. If you're not handling the physical changes well in life, understandable. And when Solomon is going through this, he writes this in Proverbs 20, verse 29. He says, the glory of young men is their strength, but the splendor of old men is their gray hair. You go through these things, and these are the challenges, and this happens for men and women both. You go through life, and your body changes. And the things that you identify for women to be a beautiful young woman, gravity happens, okay? That is just a reality of life, and it's tough on women. Men, you get older, your hair turns gray. I mean, Solomon is trying to spin this here, and he says, yeah, the young men are strong, but old men have gray hair. I would trade that any day. When my daughter was back and visiting us, I had a shirt on and she saw that I have gray chest hair now. And she looked at me and like in total disgust and said, you've got gray chest hair? Oh my goodness. I was like, oh, I'm subconscious a little bit. I can't help that, okay? And one day she's going to be old too. You know, it's tough for men, because I will say this, okay, I'm getting on a little rant here, but you know, you see these, when our daughters went through, you know, puberty, the school hands out, you have all these books on pre-puberty girls, and you get to read this book, and it tells you about the changes in the hormones and then your body, and you go, oh, and then, you know, I was at the doctor's office a year ago, and then they had all these pamphlets out there of menopausal women, you know, and it's like, you know, this is the information for that. Nothing for men. Nothing. Okay, you just got to figure it out on your own. They need to have a book for men when their bodies are changing, okay? And you get to be older. I had a friend that called me and he said, I've got this kind of going on and I think I'm getting older. And do you know anything about it? I said, why are you calling me? And he's like, I don't know. I said, ask somebody older. And he said, we don't do that as men. Okay? So that's just, I would like to write like a post-masculine, you know, your body's changing book for men. But I digress. Things happen in your life. And yet that part of that getting older is that your body starts to change. And that's difficult to deal with. The second thing is that there's goals that are reached and goals that are not reached. And you're not where you want to be at this time. Financially, you're not there. You thought your career was going to look a certain way. You're not there. And these things that you've hoped for, you realize they just aren't going to happen. And so now what? What are you going to do now? Because you're past the point of no return. It's not going to happen. And so then you start to compare your achievements with other people because you're on Facebook and Snapchat and all that kind of stuff. And you're thinking, I'm not doing as well. And then there's this, I would say, this loss of vision or dream underneath that, number two there. Proverbs 13:12 says this in the Message. Unrelenting disappointment leaves you heartsick, but a sudden good break can turn life around. And so you're frustrated because these things aren't happening. I would say the third thing going on in these challenges of the five is that there's this, I would call it a preoccupation with things and satisfaction. That's why in Ecclesiastes, you've got Solomon. He says this in Ecclesiastes 5:10. He says, whoever loves money never has enough money. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This too is meaningless. And of course, he uses the word vanity or futility or worthlessness. He says, you know what? I've got to the point in my life where I thought that I had it all, but really I feel empty. And I look around at all these people, and Solomon says, I've got everything. I'm the richest man on the face of the planet and will be for thousands of years. And he says, and I'm not fulfilled because it's never enough. Number four is just, I would say, pride. And that's just playing God. That's trying to be controlling. If you think or you're somebody that's going to control everything around you, and you get to the point in your life when you realize, I can't control anything. I can't even control myself most of the time. Proverbs 16:18 says, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. And the fifth one of that challenge, I would say, is just wrong thinking. That we just have this wrong thinking in our lives. And Solomon deals with that also in Proverbs 23:7. He says, for as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. And there is this wrong thinking when it comes on into this time in our life, this thinking that I'm just stuck in this life that's unfulfilling. I deserve a chance to, you know, make changes before it's too late to discover my own identity and find personal happiness. You don't know how many times that my wife and I have spoke with people who have been going through this, and they will say, this is my time to be happy. It's about me. We had a lady that was very involved in our church. She taught Sunday school, was involved in all the women's ministries, and she got into an adulterous relationship with a man out in California when she went out there to visit her family, and she came back and she said, I'm done. I'm done. And she said, it's time for me to be happy. It's time for me right now. And she left her husband. She left her just life there, left her kids, left everything. Because she kept saying, it's about my time. And I will say this. I believe the Lord allows this period of, I will call it uncertainty, as a crossroads or a checkpoint to force us to take stock of our lives and to be sure that we continue in the direction that he wants us to go. I realize that's kind of wordy there that I put out. But what I believe that there is a time when we go through life and we say, okay, this is what I thought it was about. And I realize that this is all vanity. This isn't what life is all about. And this is a good point to be at. But it's what you're going to do after that. What are you going to do after that point? Are you going to say, now I'm going to start to make me happy, and I believe that this is what's going to make me happy? Do you think God's going to honor that when you are abandoning your family? And the answer to that is no. So as we go on, I have 7 points here, and you're going, oh my goodness, 7 points. I'm going to go through these pretty quickly, so we'll be out of here by at least 2:30. 7 points, and I be happy because I had 13 of them and I shaved them down to 7. I thought, they can't do that. They just can't, okay? Like I said, my friend tells me in our church that we were at before, there's a fine line between, you know, long sermon, hostage situation. I try to keep that in focus all the time. I see some of your faces. Okay, not going to spend a lot of time on these, but these are all from Proverbs. The first thing I would say is this, learn to accept the changes in life. Aging is a part of life. That is just a fact of it. And no matter what you do, I don't care what, you know, special snake oil that you have out there, there is nothing that you can do or to stop the aging process. That's just part of it. Proverbs 13:12 says this, "Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is the tree of life." I would say this, don't plow through midlife crises in this rut just alone without letting God in. And that is to say to God, and he knows where you're at. He's been dealing with people for the beginning of time. He knows what you're going through. And these people that I would say that my wife and I have been, you know, involved in their life, and they've went through this time. They haven't allowed God to come in and deal with that. They are just going to deal with it in the way that they think that is going to make them happy. The second thing is this, is to recognize there's honor involved with the aging process. Growing old is normally accompanied by an increase in wisdom and experience, most of the time, not always, okay? Proverbs 16:31 says this, "Gray hair is a crown of splendor." Oh, well, that sounds good. "It is obtained by a righteous life." And that is accepting your God-given these limitations in your life. It's just, it's going to happen. For guys, you just aren't as strong, and to be able to do what you did before, I've said this before up here from the pole because, you know, it seems like it's a problem in my life. But, you know, when younger guys will say to me, "Yeah, don't do that. You're going to hurt yourself. Let a younger guy do that." Oh my goodness, I hate that. And I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to be respectful in that. But I feel like I have to prove. I have to find the heaviest object that's around and try to lift it for them. And they're like, okay, I don't know what. I got to prove the point that I can still do this. And you just have to realize there's limitations. Yesterday, I had to do a lot of work on the Jeep. And so I was on the ground, on the cement, on my back the afternoon. And I woke up this morning and about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I could not turn my neck at all. And I tried to sit up, and I was like, well, this will be fun preaching today, you know. There's limitations, and that's okay. Some people just never want to deal with the limitations. I will have people that will say to me in our previous church, and you've heard this before, maybe you've said this, they'll have kids that are like 50, 60, 70 years of age, and they'll say to me, they're like, oh, you're just a whippersnapper. You're young. I've got kids your age. I hate to burst your bubble, but if you have kids that are 50, 60, 70 years of age, you're old as dirt, okay? There's no way around it. You're just, that's just it. I know you're going to try to make yourself feel better by saying that, but you're old. Look at you. You're old. And people sometimes, they just don't want to recognize that, and it's part of the process. And my son-in-law will do this, and he will say, you know, let me do that. I'm at the point where I just say, I would appreciate that. Thank you for doing that. That's why now I have a son-in-law to lift heavy things, and he's a big son-in-law, so it works out really well for me. I call him and say, hey, Kerry, we got to move this or do that. So I call him. I'm okay with that. The third thing going on, I would say, work daily on building your faith. And I would say one of the things that you can do is just be studying and praying. It says this in Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 through 6. It says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he will make your path straight. It just came to my mind right now. I wasn't planning on this, but I'm going to share it. We had a guy named Don Peterson, very godly man in our church prior. And he got older and he had some health problems, and he was a hard worker, identified with that for years and years, very hard worker. And he lost his eyesight in a very short amount of time, completely was blind. And he was so frustrated by that, still fairly young at the time. And he said to me one day, he said, you know what, I've went through all the emotions of being mad at God and where my life is. And he said, you know, one thing I can do though, he said, is I can pray for those kids that come. What we had on Wednesday night, our adventure club, we had 80 kids coming at the time. And he had a list that his wife recited to him, and he prayed for each one of those kids, and he memorized their names because he could not read them, and he did not know Braille. Because he, you know, that just wasn't, you know, he was later in life when he lost his eyesight. And he prayed for those kids, and he would come down to the adventure club when we would have it. every so often. And of course, you know, he still could barely see shadows at that time. And he would talk to these kids. He knew all their names and he knew what they were going through. And Don said, I can at least be praying and I can be, you know, listening to scripture on cassette and growing in that way. Going on the fourth of the seven that I have is that, and we've talked about this, and that is that you're going to redefine your meaning and your purpose. The problem is that we have on our life, and as men and women, Proverbs 16:9 says, in his heart, a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps. You think your life is going to be like this, and if it doesn't turn out like this, then it's a failure. And it's just a journey. And in that journey, there's things that take you here and there. But that means that at some point that I'm going to start to reset my goals and I'm going to start to emphasize on the spiritual. And maybe that's, you know, the purpose is to serve God. Solomon gets to the point in Ecclesiastes 12:13. He says this at the end. He says, this is the end of the matter. This is what I've learned. Been through all of it. Had everything. Been mad at God. Thought that life was just a joke. And he says, this is it. He says, all has been heard. He says, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. He said, I've been all through this journey. And he says, when I come down to it, at the end of my life, this is what really matters. And this is putting spiritual matters first. I would say to add on to this, this is my journey for the last year, a little bit more, is the importance of family. That's why he says in this Proverb 17:6, he says, children's children are crowns of the age, and parents are the pride of their children. That's one thing that we've done, focusing and moving up here. You know our story. I don't have to repeat it, but we moved here for grandkids. Because I got to the point when about a year and a half ago, I just, not that God wasn't using us in the pulpit and the ministry that I was in and my wife was involved with, been there for 20 years, but that's just not where God had us anymore. And I knew, I laid it before God, that God wanted us to be involved in our family. Going on five of the seven, I would say this, seek godly counsel. And that's talk with somebody who's been there, done that, who's been through this journey, who has struggled with this in their life. And that means that we need to seek out people who will encourage us and they will give us advice and perspective. Proverbs 15, starting at verse 31, says this, if you listen to constructive criticism, you will be at home among the wise. If you reject discipline, you only harm yourself. But if you listen to correction, you will grow in understanding. You get to the point where you're struggling, instead of just plowing through this rut in your life and just saying, it's just up to me, I got to deal with this, and becoming angry and bitter, you seek somebody out and say, have you ever struggled with this? Is this something that, you know, is it just me or has other people been here? And you're going to get the answer that other people have been there. The fifth of the seven, and that I would say is seek godly counsel. That's talking with other people who have been there, done that. We need to seek out people who will be encouragement to us and that they're going to give the perspective. Number six is that we're going to be thankful for what we do have. Proverbs 15 says this, better a little with fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. Better a meal of vegetables where there is love than a fattened calf with hatred. And you get to the point where you look at what you have instead of complaining about it, instead of saying, I don't have that. I've got to start to do what's going to make me happy. I've got to do, and you can fill in the blank, whatever that is. You start to look around and say, you know what? I just need to be thankful for what I do have. Be thankful in that. And the seventh and last one, this, do things that lift you up. Proverbs 12:25 says this, anxiety in a person's heart weighs it down, but a good word cheers it up. And I would say this, that means that you need to seek out positive things. If you've ever just kind of been in one of these, I will call it ruts, you don't even do the things that you enjoy doing anymore. The things that you used to do in the past, you don't even care about because you are so focused that what hasn't been and isn't going to be. And maybe that's finding something new that you enjoy to do because you can't do the things that you used to be able to do. Or maybe that's a return to doing some of these things that you have enjoyed doing in the past. And as I've talked in the past, that there's nothing wrong with some of these hobbies, we'll call them, that we're involved with, that God has given us an interest. And he says, there's nothing wrong with you being and enjoying that, being in the moment, doing this thing, building yourself up in it. If it's, I mean, of course, there's the understanding that's not running off to Las Vegas with a new young blonde. That's all I'm talking about here. This is doing the things that God has called you to do, the things that you enjoy doing. And so these are the things that are going to lift you up. So as we close today, I would say this. Your life is not over when you turn whatever. You can fill in the blank there. For some people, they feel like, and as I've said here, that when they're 30, 40 years of age, either they got to make it or break it at that point because their life is coming to an end. For some people, they would put that, you know, at 65. They would put that at 70. It's interesting how when you get older, that number changes a little bit for what you consider to be old. Because this is not the end, it's the beginning of a new era in your life. And I would say that's the patience versus the impatience. Proverbs 14, starting at verse 16, says this, "A wise man fears the Lord and shuns evil, but a fool is hot-headed and reckless. A quick-tempered man does foolish things, and a crafty man is hated." He gives us wisdom, Solomon does, and he says, you know what? I've seen this. I've seen guys that are just going to run out and do the next thing, and they don't think about the consequences and what this means. And he says, it really comes down to being patient, trusting the Lord. Because you know this is true, to go back to my analogy that I started out with of being in a rut. When a tractor falls into a rut, its key is to get it out, is to drive slowly and steadily. If you start panicking and you start spinning the wheels and you start to go from side to side, you're going to have problems. And I have an illustration of this just from Easter Sunday. We had Easter Sunday here. Our kids were here and they were visiting. So everybody went to the house to eat. And then I had to run to Scott's Bluff to get a breaker for the fuse box because it was on the fritz. And so I took the Jeep and nobody, you know, or Stacy went back. And so I was going home and the road was so muddy that Sunday, our dirt road, and the tractors have been driving up and down the road because the guys have been doing field work. And I got into a rut and then I met one of the guys in the tractor that Sunday, and I got impatient and I thought, you know, if I could just go by him and keep, you know, in this rut. But then I thought, I'm just going to get on the side. And you know what happened? I slid into the ditch. There was nothing I could do. I mean, it was just a slow, gradual into the ditch. And then I was stuck. And he stopped and he's like, "I'm sorry about that. I should have got over farther." And I said, "No, it was my fault because I was going too fast. I was impatient because I was trying to get home to eat. And I knew what was going on at home, and I should have just been slower and steady and stayed in the rut. That's what I should have done. But I didn't. I pushed it." And likewise, instead of just this hurriedly trying to get out of this, whatever you want to call it, this midlife crisis that, you know, in our own strength, that you slow down and you start to see God today. Because he will be faithful to get you out. I have said that to so many, and I will say young people. I'm talking about that 30-year-old, 40-year-old of these individuals, and it happens to be just because of the circumstances of women. When my wife and I were counseling them, just remain faithful. Stay in there. I know that you feel like that you're in a rut, but you're not. You just need to keep going forward, and things will change. They will look different. You'll have a different perspective. Trust me. And they say, "Nope, can't do it. Nope, I'm out. Done. I'm out." And I will say now, some of these women, and I know men in this category too, but especially these women, because we knew them so well, and because I've heard the other things have happened because we're in connection with their ex-husbands and their children who are grown now. These women have made horrible, horrible decisions, and their life has went down a path that they thought 14 or 15 years ago that would have never went down because they were going to be happy and that they was going to look a certain way and that everything was going to be just roses. And now 15 years later, after leaving their family, it's a disaster. Their lives are a disaster. And I wish that they would have just kept on moving forward, even though that they were frustrated with their life, because it would have been a whole different scenario. But we have free will. As I close today, this word from Isaiah, he says in Isaiah 46:4, he says, "I will continue to carry you even when you're old. I will take care of you even when your hair is gray. I have made you. I will carry you. I will take care of you. I will rescue you. I am the Lord." And so this is a challenge that I have for this, if you want to call it midlife, is to have biblical thinking. It's to understand my identity is in the Lord Jesus Christ. That's where my identity is. My identity is not how I look or how strong I am or what I own or my job. It's not any of those things, because those things aren't going to be forever. They're not even going to be on, you know, long term on this side of eternity. And that's saying I will not selfishly demand the fulfillment of my own desires and dreams. And that means that I'm going to look at this biblically, and I understand, I know that true fulfillment comes in finding God's purpose in the present situation and trusting God with my future. And so the question I leave you with today is this: will you accept midlife, or are you going to fight against it? If you're somebody that's going through this, and I don't, if you're 25 or 30 or 60 years of age, if you're going through this time where you say, you know, I realize the time is going by. I realize I'm not going to be around forever. I've got to do the next thing that's going to make me happy. I've got to find this. I've got to do this. This is what it is. This is it. You can either start to do that and fight against that, or you can say, you know what? I don't know where I'm at right now. I am frustrated. Absolutely. Am I negative? Yes. Am I looking at life and thinking I'm in a rut? I would agree with that. But the thing is, I'm going to choose to be faithful at this time. I'm going to keep moving forward, and I'm not doing that in my own strength. I'm doing that with the help and support, the advice of other people, and with the Holy Spirit and with God's focus. I'm moving forward. And through that, I can guarantee you that God will be faithful in that. Are we going to choose to fight against it, or are we going to choose to accept it? Close the word of prayer. Lord, you know us as people. You know our heart. You've known people. You created us. And you know that we struggle, Lord, in our lives with looking at everything that's out there and what other people are doing and thinking that we're not being fulfilled. And Lord, I pray for us, if we're at this time in our life where we're struggling with this, if we want to call it a midlife crisis, this midlife point where we really just think that this is the best it's going to get and it's not going to get any better. Lord, I pray that just by your Holy Spirit, that you would just bring into our mind that, God, that you do have a plan and a future for us, that you are going to be there with us. And Lord, that I pray that if people are feeling like that, that if they can just put the next foot in front of the other and be faithful today, and have that long-term perspective, Lord, that if we're faithful, as your word says, that we will reap the benefits of that. And Lord, I know that if we are faithful in that, we will have the heart and perspective of Solomon, that when we go through that time, we're able to look back and say, even in that, even those problems and that time that I was in, that there was a purpose in that. And in that, I'm redefining who I am and what you've called me to do, God. And so, Lord, that can only happen if we allow you to come into our lives and to start to change our hearts, because otherwise we're going to be just entrenched in that hopelessness, and we're going to start to make decisions that are going to have major consequences for us and those around us. Lord, we thank you that you are a God of hope, and we give you thanks in Jesus' name. Amen.